So we are in the first chapter of Romans, and what we've gone through is that, you know, Paul is an apostle. That the gospel would come, and the gospel is about Jesus, and we looked at the fact that he was the son of David and the son of God, and the genealogy proved the one, and the fact that Jesus was resurrected proved the other. Christians, just as Paul was called to be an apostle, Christians were called by the gospel. He thanks the Roman Christians, and he thanks them for what they did, for the work they did, because the whole world, they said, knew about the gospel because of the work that they were doing in Rome. And then he said, I want to see you. I want to bring you a gift. And that's the gift that the apostles are able to give, which is one of the spiritual gifts in 1 Corinthians 12. And then he wants to come and preach the gospel. And we got to verse 16 and verse 17 last week, where there we see really the theme of the book, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation. For everyone who believes, for the Jew first, and also for the Greek. And so we looked last week at these, could you put that up there? These elements of chapter or verse 16 and say, yes, I don't want to be ashamed of this. And then we started into verse 17, for in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. And right now I'm going to just rearrange this verse a little bit just to help us understand it. Now, I had planned to have this on an overhead, but I've been flooded in, so I couldn't get here to meet Scott and put that together. Next week I'm going to have this because it is the theme verse of the book, and I want to make a point on this that... So I'll just speak it right now, and let's see, I actually believe I have 17. For in it, that's the gospel, is revealed, so I've put that revealed before everything, in the gospel is revealed the righteousness of God by faith. And I'm putting that together because that is the gospel message, that we don't have righteousness, and we need it. And the only place we can get it is from God. So we are all sinners. We are not justified, and we need God's righteousness. And that's the message of the gospel, that it's a righteousness of God by faith. And remember, we looked at that. Remember Abraham, when he believed God, and it was reckoned unto him for righteousness. That belief, that faith was reckoned for righteousness. And that's the message of the gospel. It's God's system of salvation. Another way that we say it is, how does God make man righteous? Through faith. And so that's why when we read this verse, I separate those two faiths there. So it's the righteousness of God by faith, and then it's to faith. It's in order to generate faith, or it leads to faith. So that's the faith that comes from, well, Romans 10:17 tells us faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. And then the last part of that verse says, the just shall live by faith. So this is an Old Testament verse that's being quoted here. And I'm going to switch that around a little bit to help us understand what he's saying here. Because when I read that, I think, the just shall live by faith. If I'm just, I live a faithful life. But that's not really what that's saying. It's the fact that the just, by faith, will live eternally. That's, we have the life, and we are just. Well, we're not, are we? No, but we rely on the righteousness of God. How? By our faith. So I'm going to have that on an overhead so that we can kind of put that together. And if you're taking notes, then go ahead and maybe write that down. I did get a few more of these Romans books in case, like we ran out when I handed them out. Pick one up afterwards if you'd like one of those. They're just the book with an empty page next to each book of Romans. Verse 18. So now we're moving into really a section that's going to go all the way through chapter 3, and that is that the Jews and the Gentiles are all guilty, and all of them need the gospel. They're lost without it. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Wrath is the word for, it means indignation or vengeance or punishment. And it's just the idea that this, what is God's wrath going to be revealed against? And he describes this in two words. He said, ungodliness and unrighteousness. Ungodliness is more towards the idea of irreverence, that you don't look and speak and relate to God in the right way. I think, when I think of irreverence, I think of, sometimes I see a bumper sticker that's an atheist's bumper sticker. And sometimes, I'm not going to say what they say, but sometimes some things are said that just rattle you. You think, and you worry about a bolt of lightning taking the car out, because it's irreverent. It's saying something about your Creator, and that's that irreverence, not looking at God in the right way. And then unrighteousness is, you just look at that word, it's not right, it's unright. And it is sin and deceit, but it's more towards injustice. You see something that is not right. And of course, sin and deceit would be that, but it doesn't weigh out right. It's not correct. Ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. And then that's suppress, meaning to hold down, hinder, or restrain. The thing about restraining the truth is just, I think of it as destroying evidence. When I see somebody that destroys evidence, that's strange. That is just odd to do that. It just proves that you're not after the truth. In Mark chapter 9 and verse 42, Jesus said, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and you were thrown into the sea. That's the idea. You have that you would stand in front of somebody going towards God. And what is the vengeance of God in this case? Well, Jesus made it pretty clear there. It's indignation and punishment. We see it in politics, the suppression of evidence, and it's sickening. Jesus faced it when he was, all those trials he went through. In the book of Acts, Paul faced it over and over when he dealt with the Jews mostly, that there was the suppression of evidence, the suppression of the truth. verse 19, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. So here is the idea that what you can know about God is known in you. It has been made known. Now we're going to dig a little deeper and say, how? How does God make known to man the things of God? Verse 20 tells us, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen. So before the Bible was, since the creation of the world, we can see the invisible attributes of God just by the things that are made. being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. So these things, these invisible attributes, which really we can look at three of them that are mentioned in this verse. Number one is he's eternal. You can come to the conclusion that the Creator is eternal without the Bible. You can look at the laws of thermodynamics and understand that physical things wear out, and that you can't get something from nothing. Now, we're not going to go into all that argument right now, but you can come to that understanding, and that he's powerful. Though you look at the scale of the creation, and you see the power. I was looking up last night the size of stars, and you know, you look at the sun and how big it is, and then you look at Earth going around the sun, and then you look at Jupiter going around the sun, and there are some stars that are bigger than the orbit of Jupiter. And we can't even comprehend the size and scale that God has created. Those type of things. Psalms 19 says we can look at the heavens and they declare his glory. Dan May, when he was here, he was talking about preaching the gospel in China, where there is a larger, many more people that are atheists. And what was the step he took? Well, he's, look at your eye, consider your eye. You know, when, do you think you could dig up a cell phone out of your yard and say, look at that, I wonder how that formed accidentally? No, you can't do that. Well, look at your eye, is that an accident? It's much more complex than a cell phone. So, and that's looking at the things that are made and concluding there's a maker. And then the fact that his eternal power, his Godhead, so that would be the idea that this is deity. This is not somebody physical. This is somebody that is not physical. So there's ways that you can look at these things. I'd read the book that Daniel, who came and preached to us, Daniel, what's his last name? Huh? Reeves, yeah. And I read the book that he brought called Undeniable. And I liked it. But what the book was saying is, these are intuitive things that you know that can be proved by math. And it was really good because they are intuitive things. We already know there is a God. But it's nice, it is a tremendous thing to see, wow, you can go through this with mathematics and show it. verse 21, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God. Now we get into Lowell used to call this the road to hell. That you take this first step, and that is, that God has told us here, we know him. We know God exists. And if you take that first step and say, I'm blocking that out, you're going down a road. And so, because although they knew not God, they did not glorify him as God. So they knew by what? By the things that are made. They didn't acknowledge or honor or glorify him. They didn't glorify him. Nor were thankful. So all the things they have, their own selves, food every day, whatever things they enjoy, the creation around them, they're not thankful. There is no gratitude there. They weren't thankful, but became futile in their thoughts. That is that those thoughts are no longer based on that first step that there is a God. And your thoughts are heading down a futile path. And their foolish hearts were darkened. So When you know something is true and you reject it, you're in the dark. That's what he's saying. It's a simple thing. I know this podium is here, but I reject it and I'm heading down right over there. It's just like, it's so simple, it's stupid, you know, that I would know something and not respond and not do something about it. But that's what he's saying is happening. You know, but your heart is darkened. Verse 22, professing to be wise, they became fools. 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 18 through about 21 talks about that the Paul there calls it the foolishness of the gospel. But he's making a point. That's really not the foolish thing. It's a simple gospel, but the foolishness is really the one who says, I've found something here, and yes, this is made by Logi, I don't know what it is. Well, yeah, when you see something made, you say there's a maker. And that's what, when you live in this world, you see things that are made and you conclude there's a maker. And if you deny that and say it's accidental, then it's just foolishness. Verse 23, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image. So now we go from those vain, foolish thoughts into idolatry. So that's that next step. These steps that I've got, I'll have them on an overhead too next week. So it's just so that we can see all those in a row. who changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. So here are all the different kinds of idols that have come, like Caesar was the Caesars back then. Some of them considered themselves to be God. Molech was after the form of a person, but was made out of wood or stone. Birds, we see that around here in the northwest coast on the Indians in the northwest coast. Some of them have a view of the Creator as being the Great Spirit. Well, that fits with coming to the right conclusion about God. It's he's spiritual and he's great and he's powerful. But then there's others that say, well, there's a raven that is deity. There's an owl. An eagle, and they have powers. Well, now you're changing the focus into the created thing and not the creator. Four-footed, you got the calf, the golden calf in the Old Testament, the goats. Creeping things, you think about Egypt and their gods, the snake, the scarab beetle, creeping things. So you've got this next step that is idolatry, and Colossians 3:5 tells us that covetousness is idolatry. And so that's something I think we see more in this society today. Where is that idolatry today? I don't see people bowing down to images here. Well, maybe, you know, when you think of covetousness, what is that? It's that greed of having things and money, and that becomes your the thing that you bow down to. Verse 24, therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves. So when they gave up God, then God gave them up to uncleanness, which would be impurity and sensuality is the idea, this idea that, okay, I give up God, but I turn to idolatry. Now it's not God making the rules. I get to make the rules. Let's make them around sensuality. in Corinth and in Ephesus, you had temple prostitutes. The idea of honoring God by prostitution. And to fulfill all lusts, the idea of shaming their bodies. Verse 25, it says, who exchanged the truth of God. Remember, we've started out with the word, I know. God says he made sure we knew. We knew. It's not something that oh, there's a guy over here and he's come to a different conclusion about there being a God than I have. And let's weigh these things out. God says that's not the way it is. If you're a human on the earth, you know. You are immersed in evidence that he exists. But they exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator who's blessed forever. So here they knew by what is made, but they exchanged that truth for a lie, whether it's Molech or a raven or covetousness. The word creature here, they served the creature. It means created thing. So we usually use creature to talk about animals, and it includes them, but it's also anything that's created. I know someone who told me recently that she prays to the universe. Well, you know, that sounds more impressive than an image or a piece of wood or rock or stone or something like that. But really, it's a created thing. It's the same thing. You're looking at created thing and praying that to that rather than to the creator. Verse 26, for this reason God gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. So here, this this is talking about lesbianism, that you've taken a step when you exchange this truth for a lie, and God gave them up to these, what he calls, vile passions. Now we're going to see that this is lesbianism as we go into verse 27, because there it says, likewise also the men. And now he gets more specific about the men, but it's the same thing with men or women. Likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another. Men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due. So this puts lesbianism, women with women, sodomy, men with men, and what does the Lord say about homosexuality? He says it's vile and it's shameful. And we live in a society that has a different view, completely different view. It's a proud thing to be a homosexual. But this is... This passage condemns it. And in this passage, when it says they burned in their lust one for another, it tells you this is a mutual understanding. Because sometimes that comes up. Well, if they love each other and they both consent, what's wrong with that? No, this is talking about those who have a mutual homosexual activity going on. And then the question comes up, well, is that loving? You know, for me to take this position, or for anyone to take this position, you know, and say, here's two people that love each other, and to take this position that it's vile and shameful. And the answer to that is yes, and it's because the Lord has spoken. Jesus said in John 12:48 that this is going to be the way that we're judged on that last day. Jesus said, my words will judge you in the last day. Now another question comes up, maybe it's there, and that is, well, this isn't Jesus speaking, this is Paul speaking. But remember, in John chapter 13 and verse 20, Jesus said that when the apostle spoke, it was him speaking. And when he spoke, it was the God, his Father, speaking. And he puts those three together and say, it's all from God, from the Son, and really from the Spirit, because the Spirit is who guided the apostles when they spoke. So yes, it is a loving thing, because it's preparing someone for eternity rather than for 80 years here on earth. Verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. So this, in verse 28, the word is used here that is the same word that we use in the Lord's Supper when we say we are to examine ourselves. We consider our own lives. And this is saying these people have considered these things, but they've decided they don't like God in their knowledge. And that's that first step of knowing. They've considered, they know, but they don't like God in their knowledge. And it tells us there that this is, well, it's a debased mind or a reprobate mind. Now, to make that first step is a wrong step. We've gone down the path here into homosexuality, and it's talking about that mind being a debased mind. I'm not sure whether this is talking about that first step that you turn away from God when you know and you don't want to retain that in your thinking, or if it's when you've gotten to this point. But it's certainly all connected together, and it's the path of a mind that's not thinking straight. Verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness. So this is now going to talk about a long list, there's 22 of sins. And he's talking, let me put it in this way. Step one. You know there's a God, but you don't want to hear it. You put it out of your mind. Step two, you debase yourself. You dishonor your own body. Step three, you're going into all these sins which tend to be how you treat other people. Now, we're going to see that in this list, and I'm just going to go quickly through and read it. I have some copies of what each of those words mean. I decide I'm not going to explain every one today. I thought if you want it, you can have that list and put and copy it off if you'd like to put that in your books. But this is that some of the things that you're going to see that debased mind end up in. Being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. So these who knew that God was, refused to have God in their knowledge, and the result was, along this path, a debased mind. And because we no longer have a set of instructions because we rejected God, we make up our own. And then all these lists of sins can emerge. So there's a list of those with a brief description of each. If you want that, that's another thing that, I'll have a copy of it back here if you want that. And so we begin now in chapter 2, and this chapter, In general, this first chapter has dealt with speaking to the Gentiles. Does it apply in other areas? Yes, it does, but it's basically to the Gentiles. Chapter 2 basically is talking about the Jews. When we start here in verse 1, like the first part, it says, "Therefore you are inexcusable or indefensible, O man, whoever you are who judge. For in whatever you judge another, you condemn yourself. For you who judge practice the same things." So let's just start with what it actually says. This man is somebody who judges, and he's doing the same thing. Now, is that a quality that the Jews were demonstrating? Yes, I think as we go through this chapter, we're going to see it more and more. It's honing down to, he is speaking to the Jews. They fit this description. But at this point, what we're talking about is a judger who practices the same thing they're judging about. And we see it, and we see the hypocrisy in that. You think of a boss who catches somebody cheating on their time card. Well, that's wrong. But then he goes after that guy, but then he goes and cheats on his taxes to the government. And you see that hypocrisy. Seneca was a guy who lived during the period of time that Paul's talking about, and he was a Stoic. So he was one of the guys that told everyone, live a life of austerity, limit what all the good things that can come, and don't seek the comforts of this world. But on the other hand, you look in the history books, and he was a rich guy. So he wasn't living that, and he was preaching it. We got to turn back to ourselves and ask ourselves, do we do that? Do we look at a politician who's mishandling funds, and that's disgusting, and we see that corruption, and then when it comes to our own lives, we have some income that comes in, and you know, this is cash, and I don't have to say it's income, and I can get away without paying my taxes, and it's mishandling of funds. It's the same thing. So we want to steer these things to ourselves and say, how am I doing in this? Verse 2, but we know that the judgment of God is according to truth against those who practice such things. So here's six verses that tell us in this chapter, this is the first one, that how judgment will come. Judgment is according to truth. It's according, in verse 5, it's according to righteousness. In verse 6, it's according to works. Imagine that. We're in a book that the book is about salvation by faith. And there are those who claim that this book says it's by faith only. Well, we know that's wrong. But here, right here in chapter 2, it tells us that judgment is according to works. It is what you do. And we're going to see this as we go through chapter 2. We're going to see five or six different times when works, what you do, what you practice, those are the things that judge you. Okay, I got stuck on that word. The next one was verse 11. That judgment is going to be impartial. Verse 12, it's going to be by the law. Verse 16 is going to be by Jesus Christ. So this is the way things are judged by God. There is going to be no partiality. And do you think this, O man, you who judge those practicing such things and doing the same guy, that you will escape the judgment of God? So he does the same thing he judges about, but somehow he's got this superior view of himself, what I would call a badge of merit. I'm special. And that's why I think we're narrowing it down to talk about the Jews' attitude. They definitely had this attitude. I am a Jew. I'm of God's people. I rest on the law. In fact, I'm the custodian of the law. God has given it into our hands. and I boast in God, and I'm the only nation that boasts in the one true God. And you are those three things, is that going to justify me? And that's what God is saying. No, it's going to be based on righteousness, truth, and impartiality, and according to your works. You don't have a free pass. And then, of course, again, we apply it to ourselves. And there's a word that Christians are sometimes accused of. Oh, you're holier than thou. You know, well, that's that attitude. Now, I am holy. I am a saint. I have been forgiven. God has special attention for me as a Christian. All those things are true. But have I taken that and I feel superior to others and I show that? And it happens. That's where that idea comes up. Oh, they're holier than thou. They're just got that attitude like they're a step above. And so we have to be careful ourselves on that. And then verse 4, or do you despise the riches of his goodness, forbearance, and long-suffering, not knowing that the goodness of God leads you to repentance? So he's saying, you know, God's good. God is forbearing and he's long-suffering. But you want to go judge someone. But God doesn't, God is holds off. He restrains. He delays punishment. But you want to go judge someone. So are you despising those riches that God brings you when you take this approach? I didn't realize I must have missed that bell, but we're a little past time, so we'll cut it off right here and pick up in verse 5 next week.